Finance Committee order. Apologize for the late start. We're it's that time of year where we have people scattered all over the place. So, we've got enough to conduct business, and there'll be more joining us as we go along here. Today we are only planning on taking up three items: House Bill 26, which is short-term commercial fishing crew member license; House Bill 167, death certificates of deceased veterans; and House Bill 213, alcohol server education. We'd hope to take up the Garvey bonds today, but that's not ready, nor is school bond construction. House Bill 13?
House Bill 13.
Is that ready?
It's ready anytime. We've got your house
been ready. It's not ready.
That's your choice.
Okay. All right, so we'll just take up those three bills. Today should be fairly light day today. We did take up, we met this morning, took up Amber to Hess. Appreciate the committee getting together this morning.
Mr. Chairman.
And for the record, we have Representative Moses, Representative Foster, Co-Chairman Chenault, Representative Rule, Representative Harker, Representative Weirach.
Just a quick note, I had a Ways and Means Committee meeting this morning, so I apologize I couldn't come. That's why I wasn't here.
I understand that. Okay. Thank you for letting us know. Is Ways and Means about done, or are you still working?
Unless we take up L.
You're done. okay, well, yeah, just... right now, I don't know if we have any need for morning meetings.
I wouldn't be playing around in Ways and Means.
I'm sorry?
No, I wouldn't plan around what it means.
Okay. All right. So, with... I'm sorry?
Please.
Okay. There's nothing else to come before the committee. Let's start with House Bill 26, short-term commercial fishing. And this is Representative Moses' bill. And Texas staff here is going to present it to us. For the record, if you can tell us who you are and what the bill is about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Adam Berg, staff to Representative Moses. here to introduce House Bill 26. House Bill 26 is really a pretty simple bill. What it does is allows the purchase of a 7-day commercial fishing crew member license. Currently, the only licenses available are year-long licenses. Current prices are $60 for a resident and $180 for a non-resident, and we're proposing a 7-day license for $30, regardless of whether you're a resident or non-resident. Reason for introducing the bill is to try to put a few more options available to fishermen to earn a living. This bill does it in a couple of different ways. First, it gives fishermen an opportunity to charge tourists to come work on a commercial boat and see the Alaska commercial fishing industry up close and have a hands-on experience. Currently, people can go out with a commercial vessel, but they can't take part in fishing without a crew member license. You can't untie a boat, you can't touch a fish, you can't do anything without that license. secondly, the bill helps fishermen who need short-term help by allowing relatives, visitors, friends, something a little more affordable than the $180 non-resident license. And I want to point out, too, under the resources version of the bill, now any of these people working under a short-term license are not eligible for any type of compensation. So that's the bill in a nutshell, and I'm available for any questions.
Questions, Representative Wild.
So if I have this right, say a skipper has a purchasing fishing boat and CFEC limited entry permit, and they're up at the dock, and a visitor comes by off the dock and says, gee, that's a neat looking deal you got there, can I come on board and watch how it works and stuff? And the skipper says, well, I can do that, except you have to buy this short-term permit, crew member permit license, and you can come on board the boat, and you can help pull the purse, you can sit in the power skiff, you can do whatever. You have to pay for the license, then we come back for a day trip and you get off the boat, and you're not getting paid as a crewman, but you can watch and participate and all of that. So they're like a crew member, they can ride along, and they pay for the license, and then they get put back on shore, and they experience a real Alaskan adventure. Is that kind of how it goes?
That's part of it. Yeah, it's through the chair, Representative Wyrock. That's part of it. Currently, you could go on and observe. You could go on and watch without paying anything. But if you're going to participate in any way, you have to have that crew member license. And any boat that would charge people to take them out has to follow the Coast Guard or the vessel for hire laws, mm-hmm. which may come up later. Mm-hmm. I know. So, yeah. But yeah, that is the general idea.
So we'll follow up, Mr. Chairman. So what about the crew member that's going to, or the Joe, the dude? I guess it's good. Is this the dude fishing?
Not our words, but
that's the way you
say. Yeah.
Say the person who comes on the boat and they're going to go off for a few days. They can bunk with the crew. They can live with the crew. They cook with the crew. The whole shenanigans. But they don't. What about how to jump into a survival suit? How to get into a raft if it goes down? Commercial fishing is one of the most dangerous occupations in the world. How do we protect that Joe Dokes from harm?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock. If you're a permit holder, skipper, and you're going to have some guy come on your boat and take money from him to get the commercial fishing experience. It's really on the permit holder to make sure they roll through everything with these people that aren't familiar with the industry.
One final question, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Would the person who gets this commercial crew member's license be subject to remuneration from the fisherman's fund if they're injured?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, as it sits right now, they are eligible for that, and that has come up in previous committee meetings, and that's the way the Fisherman's Fund would like to handle that, is my understanding. I know Paul is here from Labor that could answer further questions if they need to be answered.
Thanks. Okay yeah. Were you referring to Paul Shadura?
No, Paul Lasanke, I believe is the name.
Paul's there. Okay, great. I do have Paul Shadura online too, the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. Okay, any other questions for sponsor? Okay, then let's go ahead and take Paul Shadura with the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. Paul, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thank you.
For the record, if you could repeat your name again, please.
I'm sorry. Yes, my name is Paul Shadura. I am the president of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. We're primarily a FetNet group, but we do represent other permit holders within the Cook Inlet South Central Fishing Community. Today, as before, in previous attempts to pass this bill, we do support this bill. We do not support the current amended language that would restrict compensation for commercial fishing members. In our particular fishery, we're a nearshore fishery. Our fishery is very short, very difficult to find employees, local employees here that that will take the time out for one or two or three or four days to accomplish a peak fishery. We do hire, on our basis, we hire many full-time employees, but due to the nature of the economy of our industry, it's very difficult to keep a large workforce with us. So we rely basically on the casual labor, and it is definitely a difficult situation for us. So we would appreciate if there was a consideration to strike that language on page 2 on 1718 that talks about the lack of compensation. As for the other aspects of the crew members, as for the possibility of having a tourist industry involved with it, we have no objections to that. We understand that, you know, any time that you bring, as a captain, I am very cognizant of all the federal requirements for us to, in fact, have personal indemnity insurance and other insurances that are required if you're in the tourist industry, and also I'm very very cognizant of the safety requirements for anybody that comes on one of our vessels, since we operate out of open dories And lots of times we operate on land or on the beaches or on the flats, whether it be here or Bristol Bay or in Kodiak. We always have personal flotation devices aboard our vessels, but we're not wearing immersion suits or survival suits. It would be very impractical in our situation, and the Coast Guard is aware of that. So in our particular fish, we find a real necessity for this, and also because of our proximity to the high tourist centers, we also see a really opportunity to diversify our industry. And there's many, many, many times over the years I've had busloads of people that will stop. They just want to take a look at us, but they really want to touch it and be a participant of it, take a picture of it, and we'd like to accommodate them. It's a way, like I said, to diversify some of our economic situation, and we would really appreciate that you would pass this bill, but with the recommendation to allow us to compensate those that do come on board that are willing to do the work. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Paul. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Whether the sponsor or the witness, other compensation, could that be a portion of the catch, like a couple of fish, king salmon, black cod shrimp? I mean, can't they get something? I don't know what the sponsor is.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, as it reads, the amended version here, it says that the person who holds a 7-day crew member fishing license may not be paid, receive crew shares, or receive other compensation. So I guess that covers pretty much everything.
Okay. Any other questions? For the record, Representative Holm and Representative Kelly have joined us. Representative Holm?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sir, we're late. We were at the governor's signing a memorandum of agreement with the premier from Yukon Territory for studying the railroad to Alaska. So,
very good.
That was a good thing. Adam, I'm sorry I didn't hear this if this was said previously, but why? What's the underlying reasoning for not wanting to compensate someone on the vehicles, on the boat?
Through the chair, Representative Holm. That wasn't her original idea. That got changed in the Resources Committee, and it was Representative Seaton's amendment. And I don't know that I can really be the guy to know what the reasoning was, because I never really agreed with it. I can tell you what he said, which was. He offered the amendment because our original version of the bill covered the tourist who pays to join a fishery, but it also could be used to get inexperienced deckhands while not paying them enough to get a commercial license. It comes down to cheap labor, he said, and lowers the professionalism of the industry. And then he offered the amendment, and the amendment passed. We don't agree with that reasoning, but that was the reasoning given for the amendment.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, I appreciate that. I'd like to hear the other side of that. What's the disagreement with that, other than the fact that you think that they might be able to get some money? But
well, through the chair, Representative Holm, from our point of view, if you're short-term help and you're out working in the commercial fishing industry, you should get paid. I mean, if you're paying to go on the boat, you can have any kind of arrangement you want with the skipper or the permit holder. If you're a crew member, you have to have some kind of a contractual arrangement made before you go fishing for your compensation. But if you're out there working, whether you're a tourist or somebody from Juneau that wants to go out for a week, you shouldn't be ineligible for compensation. That's our point of view.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Home. Any other questions? Okay, see none. Let's see. No one else to testify. We do have an amendment. Oh, sorry. Did you want to testify? you want to testify on House Bill 26? Okay. All right. Oh, you do want to? Okay, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had signed up and just wanted to double check.
Yeah, my mistake. I didn't have you on other people. That's fine.
My name is Mark Vinsel. I'm Executive Director at United Fishermen of Alaska. And United Fishermen of Alaska supported the bill in its original form. And I can say we still support the bill. There's been no movement to retract our support or re-vote on the support of the bill. But I do think that the bill as originally drafted, without the prohibition on the crew member being paid if operating under this license, the bill is a valuable tool for commercial fishermen to fill short-term gaps in their staff. In my own case, I have filled in a couple of times when a commercial fisherman here from Juneau has needed short-term crew. And in both cases was for less than a week. And in both cases, I made approximately $300 for my work. In both cases, I was trained with survival suit, how to use the radio, and how to run the boat enough to be able to turn it around, stop it, help save anybody who might have gone overboard or anything. But with the amount that I got paid and the amount that I was getting paid at the time, the $30 versus $60 would have been a good difference for me. It would have been about 10% of what I earned. Increasingly, we're seeing extensions of fishing season. This is something that we've been working for to help the viability of our commercial fisheries. We've seen it in the halibut fisheries, and we've seen it more recently here in the Taki River and Stikine Rivers salmon fisheries. Another trend that we see is more commercial fishing crew members are also students. We worked very hard to get the trade adjustment assistance benefits, which allow much of their tuition to be paid if they qualify. These kind of situations do call for temporary fill-in for the crew members. So we think that this is an important bill to help commercial fishermen, and we do think that the ability for the crew member to be paid is an important aspect of the bill as originally drafted. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? See none. Thank you. Sorry, we overlooked you on the list there. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify? Okay, seeing none, then we'll go ahead and close the public testimony on House Bill 26. We do have a couple amendments. First amendment is by Representative Schnell. Representative Schnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move amendment title number 1A.
Object, just here.
Mr. Speaker, what it does is exactly what we've been speaking to, I think, since the bill was presented to us. And basically, it eliminates the leak on line page 2, line 17 from may not be paid, receive crew shares or receive other compensation for work performed under the license. And basically, that would allow crew members to go on board and fix some of the inequities that they currently have. It allows them to bring short-term people on board at different times if the need arises to be able to conduct their fishing business and also be able to compensate that person for work on board.
Just to play devil's advocate a little bit here, isn't there a regular crew member license that a person can get anyway right now and do all that? I mean, it's just a matter of paying more for the crew member license, and maybe we should have Adam.
Okay, I'd like to speak to that.
And we're talking the distinction between a crew member license, which you can presently get right now, and a crew member license under this bill. Right. And And right now, a crew, you can buy a regular crew member license and do everything Representative Chenault said this amendment speaks to. You're just saving money by buying this. Isn't that the deal? How much money are you talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Weirach. That's correct. You could buy a regular crew member license if you were on even for a week, which I think is what Mark was talking about earlier. The difference would be if you're from Alaska, it would be $60 for your annual license, so it would be just doubling the price. And if you were a non-resident, it would be $180. That goes to, that's more set towards people who have family and friends coming up from down south that want to assist or take part in the fishing business. Right now, if they're not an Alaska resident, even if they're up for 5 days, if they want to participate at all, it's $180 a head.
Sure, then, the crew member fishing license you need is, you can just get a fish and game fishing license, can't you? Just a regular fishing license?
Yeah, you through the chair, Representative Weirach, yeah, you can get crew member licenses in most of the spots. You can get sport fishing licenses. You just roll out to Western Auto and pick one up.
And that's a sport fish license?
No.
Crew member
license. Commercial fishing crew member license.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to make that distinction that a crew member's license is different than a regular sports fishing license.
Okay. Any other questions? I will move my objection. Anybody else want to object? It's not Amendment 1, it's accepted. Well, I'm sorry, 1A. 1A, yes. Okay. We'll go on now to Amendment 1.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment 1.
Okay.
I have talked to Mr. Bird quite a bit about this amendment. I think you've seen this before. And essentially, Mr. Chairman, this amendment has come from folks in the charter fishing industry that didn't want to open up the world potential unfair competitors, as I understood it. That charter vessel operators have to go through quite a strict regime of getting their six-pack license, all kinds of things, and they want to make sure that, at least to the extent that if somebody's going to be working on under this crew member fishing license here, that they're not put at a competitive disadvantage. And also, this one would simply say crew members right now on fishing vessels have to participate in a random drug testing program. They can lose their ticket if they're caught by the Coast Guard and have them, say, do drugs on board the vessel. This is simply putting the skipper in the same boat as the charter operator.
Through the chair, Representative Weirach, first of all, I'm not sure which one is Amendment 1. Is it the...
I'm sorry, talking about Amendment 1. This has a 1 on it.
Oh.
Page 2, line 20.
Gotcha. Mr. Chairman, we would oppose the amendment, and the reason being, and I think you all should have an email in your packet from the Coast Guard that Representative Moses. This did come up with the Juneau Charter Boat Operators Association, and the email from the Coast Guard pretty much tells you how we feel about it. Right now, it's already there. If you're going to be a vessel for hire, regardless of whether you're a commercial boat or a charter boat, you and your crew are subject to drug testing, along a bunch of several other requirements that the Coast Guard puts on you when you're a vessel for hire. And the Coast Guard reads our version of the bill is clear now, and we don't know, A, whether we need to spell it out in the statute, and B, the second thing is this amendment would have, just as an example, if I was going in to get this 7-day crew member license, I'll pick up the license now, I'm going to have to go down and meet the skipper of whatever boat I'm going out on and have him sign the back of this license that says he's certifying that the operator and the crew of the vessel are complying with this drug testing requirement. Well, I think it adds a little bit of a little extra hassle to the person that's buying the crew member license. It provides just a little extra hassle to the captain of the boat. And it's already spelled out as far as the Coast Guard is concerned. We just don't feel it's necessary.
Follow-up person?
No, I
want to. Okay, President Schell has a question for the sponsor.
Yes, are charter operators now required to have some type of a written form where similar to what you're proposing here, that they've asked that if they have all their license fees and everything involved, do they have to sign every time they have a person come aboard?
A charter operator?
Right.
It's not my understanding that a charter operator does have to have, you're subject to a random drug test and all of that for a charter operator.
Right. If you have a six-pack license, so you fall in a different category, correct?
Right. And so I think that the major concern here was the six-pack license, the level of training that you have to go through to take people out for hire on a charter fishing vessel could be undercut by this and an unfair competitive disadvantage to taking Joe Doe's out fishing on a commercial fishing boat. I suppose you could take party of six out on a commercial fishing boat. If they want to go out and whale watch, you could watch fishing operations. Here there's no similar kind of restrictions to this bill for the kind of activities that would be engaged in on a commercial fishing boat that the charter fishing boats have to undergo. So this was an attempt to start trying to get them in the same level playing field. I don't know, the reason why I agreed to submit these amendments was to the request of a lot of the charter fishermen that work in the state that were concerned about this. They appreciated the extent of what the bill have done. It just didn't want to have it open up a whole new area. We see these things every time we get into a fishing area where somebody's giving them a care manager or something else, and that's where we're trying to work and explain things.
Right, I would just say that even to buy a crew license, and I have a crew license. I went out on the guy's boat last summer and helped him for a day, and I bought the full license. And this is not something that was required at that point, even with a crew license. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Ms. Burke, do you want to comment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment, too, that with that six-pack license, any commercial operator that's going to take people out for money has to get that six-pack license, and he's then under the same guidelines as the charter boat operators. He has to do the same things. It's just that when I go buy my sport fishing license, which I just picked up a couple weeks ago, now, if I wanted to go out on a charter with a Juno charter guy, I don't have to go down there and have him sign the back of my license telling me that he and his crew are subject to random drug testing and are in an open program. And that's where we find it to be unnecessary.
Okay. Richard Hawk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since the concern raised by Representative Weirach here, I think, Adam, is it not... is somewhat addressed in this. It seems to me that we are not creating a new competitor for the charter business because of the existing language in the bill, as amended, still prohibits anyone holding one of these 7-day crew member licenses from engaging in fishing with a rod and reel while present on a commercial fishing vessel. It would seem that that makes a clear delineation here. These guys are going to go out there, and quite frankly, somebody's going to work on 24 hours a day, and there's no matter why in the world they wanted to go commercial fishing, as opposed to, and that's not creating new competition with the charter industry, which is really more of a guided sport fishing activity.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker. That's the way I see it now. I have talked to some charter boat operators who clearly think this is going to be new competition for them. That's not what our intent is, and I don't think that's what you're going to see. I think from, and it's just my own opinion, but people that are coming out and going out on charter boats to sport fish are out there to sport fish. I mean, they're out there to catch fish with a rod and reel. If you go on a commercial boat, or if you're at a set net site, it's not the same deal at all. So I think you're looking at a different kind of tourist, and that's what we're thinking of when we came up with the bill. You're looking at a different kind of tourist, one who's maybe into doing something off the beaten track. There's all sorts of new tourism activities popping up, and this is something that would be totally different than anything they can do right now.
I think that's right. I think the category called this is creating an opportunity for a new level of adventure tourism in the state of Alaska. That's true. I just don't see a threat of it competing with the more established recreational charter industry.
Very good. What are some more questions? But okay,
Representative Holm.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, so sorry.
No, I'm
okay. Representative Holm.
Yeah, I my question is just because I'm a flatland tourister from the interior and I've never commercial fish. What is a six-pack license?
Through the chair, Representative Holm, I can't give you the out and out definition of a six-pack license. That's is what it's commonly referred to as. It's an operator's license required by the Coast Guard for people that are. It's a six-pack license is required for a variety of different activities. It's not required for commercial fishermen. It is required for charter operators, and I don't know, maybe Representative Blairock has a, I haven't been through a six-pack class myself, or so I can't tell you exactly what it is.
Didn't you go to college?
For six?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He graduated. Okay, so Representative Hart.
This is the sort of the legal version of the reality TV shows, whatever they call it, Survivor. But the charter fishermen, they have to have certain insurance requirements, first aid training, they have to have drug testing and all of that. And if you're a skipper on a crew or a fishing boat, you don't have to have any of those. The state does not require any of that on a commercial fishing vessel. Isn't that right?
As far as I know, Representative Blairock, that's correct.
And so maybe the distinction between this bill before us and what the existing charter fishing operations are is, under this bill, you go out, you participate as a crew member, you get paid as a crew member, you participate in all the fishing operations for a period of 7 days, and then they dump you back on the beach. You're not engaging in rod and reel fishing, but you're engaging in every other kind of fishing. You can engage in commercial trolling, which is hook and line. And if you're a commercial hand troller, that's have hook and line too, right? So you could commercially fish on a hand troll boat, hook and line, and that would work. It's just that you don't have the overhead that a charter operator has under their licensing requirement to take people out, the permitting overhead.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, I might be missing the point here, but I guess from our point of view, as it pertains to your amendment, is once you've made that agreement to take somebody out for money, you are under the same requirements as the charter boat operators. Coast Guard treats you both the same. Now your gear may be different, but the requirements are the same. You're a vessel for hire.
No problem.
Okay.
Amendment
one has been withdrawn.
Number two.
And amendment number two. Okay, very good. Thank you for the discussion. Okay, any other amendments coming for this? Okay. No other discussion?
Maybe Representative Moses wants to move this one.
Probably should do that. Representative Foster. It's his bill, so. You want to move your own bill?
Can we substitute for House Bill 26 resources out of committee?
As amended.
As amended.
Okay, but there is a couple of pistol homes, I think. Okay. And you recommend everybody to vote for it, is that right?
Wait.
Okay. any objections? Seeing none? Okay, so the bill is out of committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it.
Yeah.
Right there. Okay, if the sponsors for House Bill 167 want to come on up. Let's see, we have Representative, got a double header here. Representative Lynn and Representative Gruenberg, both good to join us.
And staff,
Sarah. And staff, too. Great.
Good morning,
the more the merrier.
Overwhelm or numbers?
Yes. Well, welcome back to House Finance. You have House Bill 167. And for the record, if whoever's going to introduce the bill can give us your name and title and tell us what this bill is.
Mr. Chairman, we're here today to ask your consideration of House Bill 167, which relates to providing a death certificate for a deceased veteran without cost, relating also to a program to honor the memory of a deceased veteran. My colleague here, President Gruenberg, has done the lion's share of the work on this, and so I would ask him to present the particulars. And this young lady here as well.
Actually, Sarah has really done the work here.
That's usually the case.
Usually is.
We get credit for it.
Thank you for scheduling this quickly. This was introduced by the House Military and Veterans Affairs Bill Committee. It really melds two bills together. And Section 1 is modeled on an Arizona statute and permits the family next of kin of a deceased veteran to receive one certified copy of the death certificate. And this normally is used for obtaining death benefits, but it need not be. And it's without cost to the individual making the request. And it's just simply to make things a little easier for the deceased, for the family, so that they can get Social Security benefits, military benefits, that sort of thing. And that, as I say, is modeled on a particular Arizona statute, which I can cite to you if you wish. It's Arizona Revised Statute 39-122.A. The second is modeled on federal law, and it permits the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to honor the memory of a deceased veteran who was a state resident, and not necessarily at the time of death, but had been at any time, and was discharged under honorable conditions by preparing and sending to the next of kin, as defined there, a certificate bearing the governor's signature and expressing the state's grateful recognition of their service. And it's modeled on federal law, which provides a similar certificate from the President of the United States.
Okay. Very good. Any questions? Did you want to address the fiscal perspective group?
Well, we have, I think we have a gentleman here from the Bureau of Vital Statistics.
Yes, we do. We have Philip Mitchell with the Bureau of Vital Statistics and Jerry Peel with the Division of Service Manager of Military Veterans. Okay, go ahead. So if there's no additional questions for the sponsors, then go ahead and bring up the testimony.
Well, we would hope that this could be done basically without any cost, and leave it up to the administration to explain what their fiscal note is.
Do people normally request five copies?
No, the No, they shouldn't. There's no reason there should be five copies. The I don't know how they arrived at that.
Okay.
I would think, let me tell you, the reason I became aware of this was my wife was the person who was in charge of the affairs of her Uncle Seymour. And Uncle Seymour died in Prescott, Arizona, and they sent us one of these. And I mean, it was very helpful to the family, but nobody had any. We just got one copy, and so that's all we needed.
Okay, very good. Rich and Jewel?
A lot of times, I don't know if it's an inefficient, but just in the regular passing, it can be that a person is a member of several native corporations through inheritance. Each of them, to verify death, need their own copy of a death certificate. And they're almost all of them asking for an original. And so you have, so, you know, when I lost my mother, I think we had as many as 10. And so that number can go up. And as we go out into generations, I think it's going to even get, you're going to even have to have required for more copies. And because of the inheritance or gifting or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's just from one aspect of this, in addition to all of the others, whether it's SSI or anything else, proof of debt to the government or otherwise.
Mr. Chair, if this becomes an undue burden, then you know that you may want to limit it to a certain number.
Okay, we'll see what the testimony brings here.
I might also point out that one of my hobbies is family history. We do this sometimes with the death certificates. This was not intended to enhance somebody's genealogical quest. This is simply to help a family of a deceased veteran. And that's a whole other issue.
Yeah. Thank you. Very good. Did your staff want to comment at all? Did they do it right?
They did a good job.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That's important. Okay, Philip Mitchell? I think this is your first time here this year, sir?
Yes, it is.
Okay. For the record, can you tell us who you are? Phil is, but please.
Yes, for the record, my name is Philip Mitchell. I'm with the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'm the State Registrar in Vital Statistics.
Okay, go ahead. Proceed.
There were some questions on the fiscal note, and staff from Representative Gruenberg's office asked me to be here today. Notice of this bill, I went to our staff who normally processes requests for death certificates. We were polled requests that had come in that week to see what's the average number of requests we can expect for a particular death. A few of the requests were only for one certificate, a few were for as many as 10. Most of them seemed to average around 5. So once we found that out, we went and looked at our death records. We found that currently about 30% of our deaths indicated that they were a veteran. And this average has been fairly consistent for the past 5 or 6 years. And currently we're also averaging about 300 deaths per year, or about 900 deaths where somebody indicates they were a veteran. When we started to come up with, well, how many people are going to take advantage of this program, we recognized that not everybody's going to know about it for the first few years, and it would probably take some time for everyone to become aware of it. So we started out with, we approximated that 500 families would take advantage of the program, and then increased to 900 over 3 years. Two things we did not take into account is the increase in deaths we're experiencing in the state. For instance, in 2003, we're already up to 3,178, which is a 5% increase over the 3,000 that we assumed. And we also assumed that there'd be no fee increase over the course of the fiscal note. Typically, we do have a fee increase about every 2 years from anywhere from 20 to 25%. And so that's how we came up with the fiscal note for this particular bill.
Okay. Does that include your testimony?
Yes.
All right. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mitchell, it occurs to me And I guess the question I'm trying to phrase for you is, have you had any clamoring for this to be a free service by the Department of Vital Statistics?
Representative Holmes, through the chair, no, we have not.
No one's ever asked you for a free death certificate that you know of?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A point made in the fiscal note is that it says in there the 53-year-old currently has no general funding, and I think just for the record, I think we need to point out that the Bureau of Vital Statistics in the 05 conference committee had zero general fund budgeted. However, the FY06 budget that we all moved out of here had like 84 thousand of general fund budgeted for the Bureau. So just a matter of accuracy, I think that needs to be addressed. The other thing I think we get pointed out here is that it's kind of the fallacy of our own budgeting process. We said we're not going to get the receipts of boarded services for some amount that we have to make this speculative guess on, and that's going to go down $50,000. But then in order to just make up and keep our budget balance, we've got to put $50,000 in from someplace else. We don't really have, unfortunately, in our budgeting process, the ability to say, you know, even without this, you know, the job's going to get done. You know, we're going to get more efficiency out of the Bureau of Vital Statistics operations. You know, whether it be tightening up somewhat on travel or services or the commodities or the capital outlay, you know, we don't have a line that says make it up efficiently. And again, with the speculative nature of trying to estimate how many of these might be and frankly the relatively small dollar involved, there'd be some sort of room here to argue that in this particular case that a note that would give at the most be an indeterminate fiscal note rather than saying that we in fact are going to have to make up $50,000 of receipt support services with general funds.
I'm not quite sure that I understand your question.
I think it was more of a comment than a question. Do you agree with his logic or his way of thinking on the fiscal note?
There's always possibilities that services could be changed to make up the fiscal note. I do know that this particular current year that the amount of fees that we anticipated we would be receiving is less than what we expected. And of course, every time we don't take in enough fees to cover our operation, that does lead to a shortfall.
Oh, respectfully, and again, that is why our budgeting process is built upon creating a budget, establishing a target. If the department finds it can't meet the targets, we end up back here discussing both supplemental budgets and other ways to address it. This is just one of those small items. I think to me, it really fits into that gray area that says, I'd be personally willing to do a zero fiscal note out of committee, but at the very most, I wouldn't think that we want any more than an indeterminate note that says, we're not really certain.
Okay. All right, why don't we'll revisit the fiscal note here after St. Kelly.
I just wonder, you do get to a point where the decision could be based on that. If you thought that it really was going to cost, say, for example, $50,000 to do this, and to date never had a single request for it, I might start having to struggle with that, even though my good friend, Representative Lynn has a good idea. It's a good thing to do. But I'm with Representative Hawker on the issue. I can imagine if I were running the department having one of two comments. One would be, yeah, we can try to figure out what that is, and it probably isn't much. Or the other is, no, we can do that. That's just another few things to do per year, and we can knock that out. First, from defending the department, you get too many things and you keep saying that to you go underwater on personnel. So I think it's the sort of thing, though, that when you get to this level of cost with every single request trying to do what's unarguably a nice thing, it bothers me.
And a point of officer call.
Sure.
On this point, and I think it's important to put in context of what the Bureau budget is. If the Bureau budget was $250,000, you know, I think there's a sensitivity to change that's, you know, very high. In this case, the current governor's total budget for FY06 is very close to $2 million. So we're looking at whatever this effect would be on a $2 million budget, not whatever the effect of this would be on a much smaller budget.
Good question. Okay, well, we'll revisit the fiscal note here after we finish public testimony.
I have a question.
Okay.
In a comment, I appreciate how the Bureau was run and how you're running the Bureau. I think you're doing a good job. I send out the copies of marriage certificates and birth certificates and through the mail. It happens fast. And they have wallet-sized cards now. It's great. So the question I had is, do you interpret this as only one certified copy of the death certificate is issued? It says one copy, one certified copy. Or does that mean every time the copy is requested, you issue one?
Representative Weirach, through the chair, my interpretation is it says to the individual making the request, and so that if the decedent's brothers or sisters or spouse came and asked for a certificate, that each one of those would be entitled to a free death certificate.
So it's not just one time, it's one for every requester.
That's my understanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These would be certified copies.
Yes, they would.
Yeah, because I know that when my father died, I think I requested about 30 copies, because it seems like that regardless of who you send it to, whether it's for veterans benefits, insurance policy, land issues, it doesn't matter. Title change, it doesn't matter. They want a certified copy of that death certificate. They don't want just a Xerox copy.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Representative Chenault's father dies. Representative Chenault wants all those. He requests 30. The first one's free, 29 copies. Is that how the Bureau is going to interpret that?
Representative Weirach, through the chair, if one individual were requesting 30 copies, then that's correct. The first one would be free, and the 29 after that would be a cost to the person making the request.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions for Mr. Mitchell? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Jerry Beal, with the Military and Veterans Administration.
This is Jerry Beal, Department Military and Veteran Affairs. I'm the Director of Veteran Affairs.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir.
On this particular legislation, again, we fully endorse this. On the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, as well as the veteran organizations that have spoken to about this, one of the primary focuses is because the veteran has a couple of other agencies to send the death certificates to that people that don't serve in the military have. For example, the Veterans Administration requires a certified copy, and if it is a retired member of the military service, also requires a certified copy. And this just, again, allows them to have this copy available to them at no cost.
Okay. Very good. Does that conclude your testimony?
Yes, sir. That's all I have, unless there are any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for the sponsors? Any amendments?
Representative Hawker, if you would.
Maybe make a move to, Mr. Chairman, I would ask the committee approve a zero fiscal note for House Bill 167, State Affairs.
Okay, any objections? Seeing none, that will be done. This would be the one prepared by Dr. Matt Saber. Because we have two of them, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so they'd both be zero now.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Representative Hawker.
And then, so let me, if I may clarify,
sure.
Move a zero fiscal note for the Department of Health and Social Services Bureau of Vital Statistics under Public Health, RVU.
Okay, very good. Any objections?
Yeah, hold this question. It is that we will adopt a House Finance Committee fiscal note
to replace this.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Okay. Anything else? Any other amendments? Representative Gruber, do you want to amend your bill?
I had a hard time from the speaker on his bill. I got keep a low profile. Thank you for
it has a broad title, Matt.
Problem.
Thank you for offering your co-sponsor. Unfortunately, it's a committee bill.
I didn't want to.
Okay. All right, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I wanted to thank Representative Lynn and Grimford for this bill. I'll go ahead and let me see. 167 out of committee with the attached 250 fiscal notes. Good individual recommendation. And we did an amendment.
Revised fiscal. Any objections? See none? They'll move that committee. Thank you. Both for joining us.
Thank you, General.
Okay. Last bill scheduled for today is House Bill 213. Jane first? Yeah, okay. Okay, you're not representing Ramos. Much better looking at him. Okay, for the record, if you can tell us who you are and what House Bill 213 is about.
For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Jay Ramos. And House Bill 13 is a bill that enables competent servers to renew their alcohol server education cards without retaking the full course, provided they pass the alcohol server education test. Currently, an alcohol server who is renewing their card has to take a 4-hour alcohol management course and then take the test. Servers now have to spend 4 hours every 3 years retaking a course that is frankly unnecessary. In the service industry, this can mean losing 4 hours of pay and gratuities. If a server fails the test, they would then be required to retake the full course. House Bill 213 will allow those supporting their families as professional servers in the food and beverage industry to continue their work with less government interference. That's what I have.
That's it, huh?
That's it.
Okay, we have no one who's scheduled to testify. Question?
Okay, so we're talking about a TAMS card, correct?
TAMS card, okay. Yes.
It's the easiest way for me to remember. So the feeling is by this bill that 4 hours every 3 years to update or to get any new information that may be out is infringing on the rights of workers to continue applying their trade.
Representative Chenault, through the chair, yes. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. President. No questions, but I don't know what it is yet.
Follow up, Representative Chenault.
Go ahead, Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, because I heard the query raised. We still would require the individual pass a test every renewal period. This is simply saying that if they can pass the test without going to school, it still counts.
Representative Hawker, through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
In the commuter airline business, we have to do the drug thing every so often. When you take the training, they shove you off in the room and you go down through a computer list of the questions and the answers, and then you have to go take the test, and the test has essentially the same thing. So that if you, is this test about like that too, where the study period is about like the test, so that knocking out the study period, you probably still get all the information that you would have gotten if you'd gone off and studied in one session and then taken the test. Because if that's the case, I should. I've always had sympathy to think, just give me the test. You know.
If I may, I have some professional servers on my staff who have been in the food and beverage industry for 15 years. And
who's this fellow?
Thank you for the correction. For the record, Representative Jay Rams through the chair, Representative Kelly, thank you for, I appreciate following protocol. I appreciate it. I deserve it. It's all right. And still a freshman. I have professional servers who have been in the industry for 15 years. It takes 3 to 4 hours to complete this course. You have to pass the test with an 80% pass rate. The course is designed so that you pass it at the end. It takes less than 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes to take the exam. And so my contention is that thousands of hours of lost productivity are suffered each year by folks that are professionals in the industry. And they take the test at their own peril. It was Mike Plowski who helped me in writing this bill, because he also, when he's not working in the legislature, is a professional server and has seen his way through school to do that. The exam is excellent for first-time servers who are being introduced to the industry to take the course and be familiar with techniques of alcohol management. But for those that have chosen this as a profession, it is entirely redundant to take the course over and over and over and over again, because they're required to sit for the 3 to 4 hour period. And there are several thousand jobs in the hospitality industry just in my community alone. So what we're advocating is that we stay away from the fee structure, but we allow folks to come in for the last 30 minutes of the exam, take the course, they get a new card issued to them, just the same mechanism as for those that are taking the course for the first time. And they also have an opportunity that way to find out about any new rules that have come through the Alcohol Beverage Commission. And then they pass the exam and they're awarded their new certification for another 3-year period the same way as those servers that are taking it for the first time. And just to further clarify, you have, when you're from your hire date, you have 30 days to take the exam and show proficiency. And when your card expires, you have 30 days to renew your card and show proficiency. And we think that this is in no way weakens the skill level that a professional server has in trying to take care of not over-serving somebody and not serving a minor, which are really the two primary issues that this course is designed to address.
So that was a yes, I think.
There's a long-winded yes two. Through the chair, Representative Kelly.
So two, if you do run through the test, you will actually, unfair to you, you walked in, I think, just toward the tail end of that. But may I ask Ms. Pearson, was that a yes? In other words, if you take the test, you see the material that almost in the same form that you go off of the computer and look at to do your studying, is that?
Representative Kelly through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
They practically allow you to cheat.
Right. Oh, I understand just how it works. It's very frustrating, Mr. Chairman.
I meant to ask the ABC board is okay with this. Is that correct? Have they testified or weighed in on it?
Mr. Chairman, they actually, Labor and Commerce, they did not have, they opted not to comment, but I have an excellent relationship with the board, and if they had heartache with this, we believe that they would have weighed in, so we take it to be an assent by the fact that they did prepare fiscal notes, so they're well aware of this bill moving through. We believe that they support it by their absence of being online to dispute its well-being. We think it takes thousands of hours because a lot of folks are missing a shift to work in order to take this exam. It's difficult to find somebody who will provide the course. So often you have to lose a day of work or a day with your family in order to take it.
Okay. Representative Schnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the test is the same once you've taken the test once. The test hasn't changed over the last 3 years.
Mr. Co-Chairman, it's a lot like CPR. And it would be like taking that test over and over and over, except that the difference with the TAMS courses is that you're actually, to use the analogy, you'd be performing CPR every single day and then being required to take a refresher course on it every 3 years, and this way you just be would be taking the exam. So the test is basically basically the same. You know, they just want you to sit through the course. It's exceptional for first time surfers in the industry.
And also just a comment from you more than anything else. My only concern, and I understand the reputation, I went through other safety classes with the same type of class that were required to take them every year. My only concern would be that where they got their new information, any new information that came out, and that as long as they get any new information that can help them dealing with the public on alcohol issues, then I would probably just support them.
Interesting. Thank you, Representative Shaw. Representative Barber.
That's a good question. I do know one blind bartender who lives in downtown South that says written test. He takes his things, he hears it pour up and gives them verbally his test. It says written in your bill.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, I'm a tremendous supporter of the Americans with Disabilities Act, so it didn't really cross my mind to show any bias towards somebody that would have to take the test in an alternate fashion. I don't know whether it's worthy of an amendment in order to address that. We simply tried to mimic the existing language to make it easier. As far as I know, the test was always presented as a written exam, but we certainly would entertain happily any amendment to address those Americans with a Disability Act.
Okay, why don't you come through that, Representative?
One more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your Section C, which amends it, AB allows the person to get a card or other proof acceptable to the board, and C says a card. Would that be or other proof acceptable to the board as well? Does it have to be this card?
Through the chair, Representative Weirbach, presently everybody is issued a card, and although the alcohol board can, from time to time, they'll make a compliance check on the premises, what is much more frequent, at least at one of the properties I own, is having state troopers do a walkthrough, and they may ask staff to show their TAMS card, and either they will have their card on their person, or we will try to maintain a card in a file to keep them from being fined. But a card, as far as I know, is the mechanism that all the TAMS providers or like program providers offer, and that's why we didn't want to get into an online test or something like that. We wanted to stay with the same program to make it easy for law enforcement and for the alcohol board as well as for the server, so that we maintain the same level of compliance and don't complicate it.
Anything else? Okay. Representative Kelly.
As amazing as it may sound, Mr. Chairman, on a day without the camera, I was going to ask about the fellow that over-served the Representative Wyrock, the blind fellow in university. So he took care of that.
Wine and beer, bleed. It's all on tap. Two bottles of water.
Wow. Okay, great. Anything else? Representative Wyrock, did you want to make that amendment?
No, okay.
I don't want to fiddle with it. I think it's a written test, and some people are not going to force them to take a written test if they will. It'll accommodate.
Very good. Okay, any other questions, comments, amendments? Seeing none, Mr. Foster.
Yeah, I'm going to move on to HB 213 out of committee with the recommendation.
Any objections? Seeing none, bill passed that committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes our business for today. Tomorrow is going to be a little different. We are going to take up Hospital 53 again. That is the Children in Need. I think that's Representative Coghill. And then also, we're going to start down the path here of the tort reform. Look up Senate Bill 67, Claims Against Health Care Providers. And I do hope to have Garvey Bonds 275, I believe it is, as well as House Bill 13. And I think that's
13 is the 70-30 school construction.
Is that House Bill 275?
That's Garvey Potts, yes.
Understand, but is that a House Bill or a Senate Bill?
House Bill. Ms. Cunningham, what am I forgetting? Are we bringing up anything else to him?
Sounds like enough.
Good.
Don't dare agree 141 or the room will be packed. We will not be taking that up tomorrow. Anything else? Okay. We're adjourned.
Maybe
oh, sorry, I got it right here.